What's up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of Booty Digital Marketing, the show that tells you everything you need to know about marketing and business development. I'm Rita Sekalian. In today's episode, you guys, we're going to be talking about how you should divide your market and how you should start your own business. What do you need to do? We're also going to be interviewing Anis Abdelkadim, who is going to talk to us about their family business, which is super exciting. Stay tuned. Alright, you guys, in the first segment of today's show, we're going to be talking about how you need to start your business or how you could start your own business. So here's the thing. There are so many people that are dreaming of starting their own business, but for some reason, for some odd reason, they never do. And usually, you guys, the reason really is not that odd, but usually it's because of fear and they're held back by these fears. Sometimes they're held back by fears of failure, fear of what will people say, and fears of the unknown. Some, however, are fortunate enough to be fortified through the process, through access to key knowledge. My hope in this episode, or through this episode, is that we can find the knowledge, or provide the knowledge, that you will need to help you start your own business. So young entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs out there, this episode is specifically for you. First things first, to start a business, you need an idea. So one of the biggest hurdles in starting a business is finding a good idea. It is important to note, really, you guys, that good ideas do not happen overnight. Usually they begin with an idea that is then shaped and then reshaped and then reshaped over and over and over again until it actually becomes something successful in business or a successful business idea. With that said, most entrepreneurs really get inspired by something they experienced. What does that mean? So it could be something in an industry that they've worked in, or a problem that they would like a solution to. It may even be a passion of theirs, and they just want to share that passion with others, like bakers, for example. And it could be something that they were inspired by a course they took in college or so forth. So what you need to do is be on the lookout. What's around you? What's going on in your life? And how could you be inspired to create something new? So, for example, after years of experience in a website development, an employee could be inspired to open their own business that is similar to the one in their industry, right? So what happened there? They took their experience and they started something new because of what they had learned. They now had the skills to start their own businesses. Other people may be inspired by their daily activities. You know, not too long ago, I actually saw a featured business on Shark Tank that was literally inspired by their workout routine. And all they did was create a spoon that fits perfectly into a water bottle. There, they had a problem. They were dropping all the protein stuff on the floor because, you know, it didn't fit. And so they solved that problem through that solution, right? Creative thinking. What problems are you facing? And how could you actually make it better? So if you're looking to get inspired, look around you. Once you do that, then do your research. Is this market growing? Do you have the ability to actually create a successful business? If so, how quickly? All right. So idea number two, or what we need, step number two would be a business structure. And we've talked about these before, but for the sake of this episode, we're just going to talk about, the necessity of having a particular business structure. So once you've identified the type of business you want to create, the next step would be to identify the business structure. This could be something like a sole proprietorship. It could be a partnership. It could be corporations. It could be a franchise. Any one of these, or any other business structure that you could think of, would be good as long as you have a set idea. So obviously there are several influences or several factors that influence this type of business. However, whatever you decide to choose, you need to figure out, you know, the type of taxes it requires, the type of laws it has, the anything that you would need to know about that business structure, right? So number three is business plans. Now, business plans really sound crazy. Like, they sound really scary. People are afraid of them, but they're not. You can consider them like a blueprint to build a house. A blueprint presents all the facts that someone needs to know in order to actually construct a reliable and sturdy structure. Business plans do the same thing for businesses. They provide all the needed information that entrepreneurs like yourself need to make sure of so that their business is actually a success. So having this information can help the business owners lessen their doubts and their fears. You know, people are afraid of opening the businesses because they don't know what's coming next. But if you have an actual plan, that might actually make it a little bit better, all right? So a good business plan should include the following, you guys. One, the executive summary. So what is an executive summary? Basically, it's an overview of the business plan that briefly kind of summarizes each section. Cool. Consider it like the your best foot forward. If I'm to read the business plan, and the first thing I'd see is an executive summary, and if I'm excited about it, then I'd continue reading. So if you're planning to present that, you want to get people excited about your plan, you do the executive summary. B is business overview. And really, the business overview describes the term of the structure, the history, the location, and means of conducting the business. C is operation plans. How would you run your business? D is market analysis. E is product and services. What are the types of products and services that you will have? F is sales and marketing. You want to talk in this section about who your target market is, and what kind of pricing model will you be using, and would the target market buy your product for that price? Next, we have competitive analysis. This is where you analyze your competition and see where you can create a competitive edge. H is the management team. Who's on your team and how are they involved? I is the financial plan, which really includes all the financial information that you'd need. It includes maybe like what it is for the next few years or the anticipated funds, how are you going to get the loans and so forth. And finally, we have projections, and they provide the projected income statement and balance sheets for the next upcoming years. All right, so that's what a good business plan should have. Now let's move on a little bit to the to number four, right? We were back at listing things that you should be doing for a business or to start a business. So what do we have? We have finance. So once the business plan has been prepared, it's time to begin working on acquiring the appropriate funding to start your business. Can't open the business if you don't have the funding for it. So we need to find a way to finance. The most common form of business financing is usually bootstrapping, which is a term that refers to business owners that use their own resources to finance that business. Alternatively, of course, there are other forms of financing, and two of these forms that you should probably be aware of is debts and equity. And what do we have? So debt in financing is exactly what it sounds like. You owe someone something, right? So when you take out a loan, you have a debt. So basically, it requires money to be borrowed and repaid. And of course, this is kind of where loans come into play. Then we have equity financing. And really, equity financing is selling company stocks, right? People are going to buy your stocks, and that's how you're going to thrive or find the financing for your company. There are also, you know, when the project is a bit bigger, there are people who are called angel investors and venture capitalists. And we have the angel investors really are individuals who are experienced investors that use their own money to finance new startups. And typically, they invest their businesses early on or in the businesses early on in its development stages. And then we have a venture capitalist, and they tend to be involved at a later stage, and they tend to focus on high growth companies. So what will happen is that they would really usually voice their opinions, or at times voice their opinions in these companies rather than just giving the entrepreneur creative freedom. So hopefully you found these tips to be helpful in how to start your own business. If you did, make sure that you are subscribing to our channel. Make sure you're subscribing to Boutique Digital Marketing. Of course, check out the website, boutiquedigitalmarketing.com. Up next, we're going to be talking about how you should drive or how you should divide your market. All right, you guys. So previously we talked about the importance of market segmentation, and really just to kind of do a quick recap, market segmentation is breaking up the grand market into segments so that you can create marketing messages that reach each individual group. Now, as mentioned before, market segmentation is not a particularly easy thing to do. So we have to figure out how do we actually do this. In this episode, we're going to talk about three different types of segmentations, and hopefully that will make the process a bit easier for you when you're working on digital marketing, when you're working on any kind of marketing, really. But for our sake, we're going to talk about digital marketing. So what do we have? The first thing that we have is demographic segmentation. Now, this, I think, is the most common form of segmentation. It's also the most intuitive. You know, you group people based on things like age, gender, income, and culture. When it comes to, you know, age, when it comes to market segmentation, really, I think it's the most basic element, right? The easiest thing to divide people by is age. For example, when you're selling toys, it's common knowledge that toys that are for toddlers will not be used by 8-year-olds. So by virtue of the product itself, the market has to be divided by age, from 2 to 4 or 8+, whatever the case is for this particular product. By creating these segments, the business can then target them with relevant messages that address their wants and needs. Of course, in this case, we are targeting their parents, but we're still creating a particular market. Next thing we have is gender. Now, gender is really another very frequently used distinction between groups. Using the previous example, you know, the toys for the 8-year-old girls are generally different from the toys that are for 8-year-old boys. Even if they're using the same products, like bicycles, for example, these products usually differ in colors and, you know, they're usually associated with each gender, like pink or blue. And the manufacturers that are manufacturing these bicycles need to be aware of that market distinction. And so does the person creating the advertisement. The message that will interest an 8-year-old girl will differ from what will interest an 8-year-old boy, even if the product is absolutely the same. Next up, you guys, we have income. So income is a very important demographic segmentation element. What income bracket is the product being sold to? Is this a product that is a luxury, or is it being used out of necessity? These are all questions that we want to answer. For example, an iPhone has a completely different market than the TLC phones. Both are smartphones, but iPhones are marketed as a luxury smartphone, whereas TLC is a convenient smartphone. And they each market their product differently based on the type of market that they want, based on their income bracket. Then we have culture and beliefs. So the cultures and belief of a segment can determine the message for, you know, for the audience. For example, some people believe, you know, in Europe, for example, Christianity is a big thing. So the things are marketed on Christmas that wouldn't be marketed the same time somewhere that is not a primarily Christian population. Same thing goes, for example, for Mother's Day, and it's celebrated on different days in different countries. If a company is marketing a Mother's Day gift, it's important to know when the date is according to that culture. Otherwise, there's no point. So we divide things based on culture and based on beliefs. The second segmentation is the psychographic segmentation. So as the name suggests, psychographic segmentation is related to psychology. And it is the division of the market based on the customer's personality and characteristics. So their interests, their lifestyles, and things of that sort. Now, this market segmentation process focuses on similarities and thoughts and behaviors rather than demographics. For example, vegans generally share a common love for the environment. And although they may be different ages, different cultures, different economic statuses, they still have that in common. In this case, the marketing message is targeted towards a particular age. It's not targeted towards a particular age group, as with the toys, but rather an ideology. So our next segmentation and our final one for today would be behavioral segmentation. So through behavioral segmentation, the market is divided according to the behaviors of the desired customer. For example, the decision-making process that a customer goes through would be considered a behavioral segmentation. If you've ever shopped at Amazon, for example, you would notice that Amazon will suggest products that really just go with the products you're buying. This is done based on data that they have on customer behavior. How is the customer behaving on that Amazon site? That's what will give the system the ability to actually suggest similar products. So if customer A bought items 1 and 2, and customer B bought items 1 and 3, when customer C is browsing item 1, based on the data, they will most likely be interested in items 2 and 3 as well. Because really, they're just exhibiting the same or similar buying behaviors as customers A and customers B. So Amazon will then suggest these items to customer C. This is the outcome of accurately using behavioral segmentation. In the example above, Amazon uses data analytics to access customer behavior. However, that may not be, applicable to a lot of other businesses or a lot of people that are starting out new. And if this is the case for you, there are other common behavioral segmentation categories. And these include occasions, loyalty, thought and benefit, and readiness. So the occasion segment divides the customer based on the occasion that they would use for that product or that they would use the product for. It focuses on an event that would lead the customer to need that product. For example, if someone's planning on hiking a trail like El Camino de Santiago, the Way of St. James in Spain, which is a very, very popular hike from France to Spain. Let's say they want to hike that trail. And they would need hiking equipment for that particular occasion. They don't normally go hiking. They don't normally go to places like these, but this is a pilgrimage that they want to take. So they need hiking equipment. So those who are selling the gear can target hikers as they prepare for that event. So another way of segmenting behavior is through loyalty, which is a way that focuses on customer retention. We've talked a few times about customer loyalty in the past, but hopefully this will kind of give us a little bit more of an explanation. And, after a while, customers begin to buy a certain product because they're loyal to that particular brand. For example, those who have been using an iPhone for so long will tend to buy that iPhone once they need an upgrade. That is because of customer loyalty. Same goes for Samsung. We know people that are using Samsung that have used it for ages and ages. So, with that said, this is because of customer loyalty. And if you're not really sure about what we're talking about, or you really want to know more, check out the boutiquedigitalmarketing.com website. We have articles on what are the benefits of customer loyalty, what is a customer journey, understanding your customer needs and behavior, and tips for customer retention. And I think they're all relevant to what we're talking about today. Next, we have thought benefit. And thought benefit breaks up the market based on the benefit that the customer is seeking through that desired product. Handbags, for example, are a really good example of that. the market could be divided on those four handbags on those that are using the bags to carry books, like teachers, for example, and mothers who may need the bag for diapers and bottles. And this could be the same bag, but the messaging will differ between marketing that same bag to the teacher who needs it for the book and to the mother who needs it for the diapers and the bottles. And lastly, we have readiness. Readiness could be broken up into categories that Professor Edward Rogers came up with in 1962. He explained this, the concept of diffusion of innovation. He explained that there are five categories that consumers could fall into when it came to readiness to try a product. These are innovations that make up a 2.5% of the population. And next we have early adopters, and they make up 12.5% of the population. Then we have early majorities and late majority, and they make up 34% of the population each. And lastly, we have laggards, which make up 16% of the population. So what in God's name did I just say? I'm going to explain it. Do not worry your little hearts. All right. So each of these categories requires a specific type of messaging and marketing. Understanding the stages of innovation will help determine in which category to focus on when creating the marketing campaigns. For example, in the case of smartphone technology, there are those who seek to acquire the newest technology. And that would be, those would be the innovators and maybe early adapters or early adopters, sorry. These people are willing to try it first, and then, you know, they tell their friends, and those are the early adopters, and they try it, they like it, and then they move on to the early majority, to influencing the early majority. So the early adopters influence the early majority, and those then influence the late majority. Right. When the iPhone 11 came out, for example, those who were seeking the newest technology purchased the phone. Then they influenced others. Soon after that, there were thousands of TikTok videos featuring the phone in one way or another. Once these videos had their influence, they then influenced the majority. So, considering the readiness to buy a particular product is an important way to know where and when to market. All right. So, to recap, in this particular segment, we talked about the key segmentation characteristics, which were demographic segmentations, psychographic segmentation, and behavioral segmentation. If you enjoyed this podcast, again, don't forget to subscribe to our newsletters and to our podcast every week. And, of course, we're on the radio. And up next, you guys, you really want to stay tuned for this. We have Anis Abdelkarim, who's going to tell us all about their family business and how they grew from nothing to something that is pretty amazing. Stay tuned. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me today is Anis Abdelkarim, and he is just a wonderful young man. I actually met Anis when I was in university, and he was there. He was studying accounting, and later on went on to get his MBA from Laverne. And right now he's working in his family business, and it is called Star Product, which has been around for more than 35 years, which is pretty exciting. I'm going to tell Anis, or I'm going to give Anis the mic so that he can talk a little bit about himself. Hi, Anis.
What's up, Rita? How's it going?
Good. Alhamdulillah. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great.
Tell me about yourself.
Yeah. So thank you. I definitely, we met at UCR. It was a great, great experience. I really enjoyed UCR. I did my undergrad in accounting, and I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, especially about business. Accounting was a really good way to get started in understanding, you know, business functions and, you know, how a lot of, you know, companies work, right? And industries. So I really enjoyed that. I kind of went into accounting for a little bit after I graduated. I went to UCR for only 3 years. I graduated a year early, went into corporate slavery, and, you know, I did not like it at all from the start, and I knew it right away, and I'm glad I made that call very early on. And then so I kind of took like a quote unquote gap year, like with my fourth year since I had finished. Did a lot of traveling while working, obviously, like entrepreneurial stuff. And like, you know, we have our family business and stuff like that. So just kind of enjoying that. And then I ended up doing my MBA after that fourth year. And so I finished that in about a year. I did finance and marketing. Learned a lot there too. It was really nice. My goal with school was honestly like get in, get out, you know, enjoy, but also, you know, learn, save a lot of money, save a lot of time. And so, yeah, I did just that. I was really happy with that. And now I'm currently, you know, with Star Products, my family business. Like you said, we've been doing it for 35 plus years. It's a pretty interesting industry to say the least.
That is, it's all wonderful what you did and how fast you finished and how you got everything together. I do want to ask you, you mentioned corporate slavery and you said corporate slavery with those exact words. Why? What happened there?
So you have to understand, I guess, the accounting industry in general. The accounting industry in general is very cutthroat. I think over the years, they definitely have gotten better based on, you know, what I have learned in school and, you know, in like being there and consumed in the industry. Right. And so, they really expected a lot out of people. And, it was a very structured industry. So you put in the work, you know, you play the politics and all that kind of stuff, and you're going to move up. But, it was just so demanding. It was honestly depressing. I have so many friends that are still in this industry, and they honestly have told me like I'm so jealous of you and all this stuff, because I remember like we would talk so much about accounting. You know when you're in school and you're looking to move into your career, you know, so much information, and you're just, you know, doing job interviews and, you know, all this stuff, and it's just exciting. And so I just remember just talking to my friends throughout college, like going through this, and it was exciting. And then afterwards, I'm like, wow, I made the best decision ever to get out of this, you know, and I'm seeing it firsthand with my friends. And for me, obviously, you put in the work and you get rewarded, especially with pay, right? So the pay was really good, but the money was never an issue for me. I never prioritized it. That wasn't, you know, something that, you know, for me, I can make money. That's not a big deal, you know, and so I didn't want to be there for that. And I wasn't happy. So I left. I left it and I just decided, OK, you know what? I want to go get my MBA and, you know, just do my own thing and, you know, travel and, you know, enjoy my life the way I want it to be, you know.
So that was a really good explanation of why you thought corporate slavery, or you thought the corporate world, was so so bad. Do you think that having the influence of an entrepreneurial family or a family business helped shape that vision of what you thought, okay, well, this is not the place for me, because you had a different example of what life could be like?
Definitely. So for me, what's very, very important is being flexible, flexibility, time and schedule. I mean, for you and I mean, we discussed that briefly earlier, and it's just, you know, flexibility is so damn important. And it just, I think it allows more, first of all, thought process, creativity, so on and so forth. There's just so many things down the line as to, you know, being flexible with your own schedule that it can bring you. And it'll just, you know, I think it makes you more of like a wholesome person, not only in business, but just in general, you know? So, it's very, very important that I grew up, you know, with this flexibility. You know, my dad, especially, he could never work for anyone. Never. I mean, just the way, you know, as an immigrant, especially a Lebanese dad. Yeah. It's so tough. It's so tough. You know, they're very stubborn in so many different ways. And, you know, but at the end of the day, like they, you know, they came here, you know, escaped war and made something out of themselves, coming from a small village with like basically nothing, and turned into a, I guess, a success story in the U.S., I guess the American dream. Right. So, yeah, it definitely held a big role in my life growing up this kind of way. And it's not just me, it's a lot of our family.
I 100% agree. And I think, honestly, when you mentioned the American dream is earned. It's not like given to you. You really have 100%. To, you have to work on it. And I think if you could probably agree, if my parents or your parents could actually do something coming from, you know, Lebanon and coming back from, you know, small, villages in Lebanon to here and still make something out of themselves, it's because it's available to people if you work hard on it. You know what I mean? So
definitely, definitely agreed.
That's something that people have to keep in mind. I mean, I think in our generation, there's a lot of entitlement issues that we talk about, that we deal with in our societies. And they got to understand that the American dream is not something that you're entitled to. So
yeah, I actually want to briefly touch on entitlement. I think that that's a huge issue, especially, you know, within our community and within our generation in certain ways of, you know, not being, you know, not being entitled, I guess, to finances or like, you know, I guess it's just kind of a way of life, like being deserving of having everything. Right. I just kind of go about, you know, especially when it comes to business, like like you just said, like I don't deserve to be successful. I don't deserve to, you know, be out there and, you know, make money. I have to earn it. You know, I have to earn what like if I want something, I have to earn it. I'm not just going to get it handed to me, right? So I think that that's a big issue that a lot of I've seen in a lot of people within our community, but also I've seen the complete opposite. Very successful, very smart individuals, even within our generations that actually, you know, have put in the work and they really like, you know, they have this full wholesome understanding of what we're talking about right now. And it's just like in Arabic, it's like, you'll say like, wahad, wahad fahmin, you know, like they just get it. They just yeah. know, you know what I mean? Like, so it's a wahad fahmin, you know,
I didn't take it offensively.
Nowadays we don't know anymore, you know. You have to say both. No, just kidding. But seriously, it's really like something that's really it really makes me sad because the older generation a lot of them came with not a lot, and so they built something so great here, and then so I see like within the community a lot of these younger generation kids where they just have this sense of entitlement. And it really, I feel a lot of empathy towards them because they just don't understand. They don't get it.
Mm, absolutely. So hopefully the point of the show actually is to help entrepreneurs build their businesses and help them do the marketing for their businesses. Hopefully the people who are listening can actually benefit from this and hopefully change their mindsets.
Exactly. So it all starts with the mindset. Exactly.
It's the way you think about it. I don't think there's, you know, there are certain privileges that are given, more privileges that are given to some people versus others. But depending on like the socioeconomic class, the education, definitely, the everything that comes into it. But with the current openness of the World Wide Web, right? It's worldwide. You have access to all kind of information. Mm-hmm. It's really at your fingertips should you choose to use it. So
definitely.
So coming back from our little digression, let's talk a little bit about your family business. Being a part of it, did you always know that this is what I want to take over one day, or this is what I want to be a part of one day? How was that for you?
No, definitely not. I honestly wanted to be away from it. It's so hard growing up as a Lebanese American or just Lebanese outside of Lebanon in general and trying to have a general understanding of how your immigrant parents think and do things. And so when it comes to business, it's even more, you know, like it's, I guess you could say it's even worse in a way. So they have their old school ways. And for me, it's like, I like, you know, doing it a certain way and just like the way I was taught and learned being here in the US. You know, but they definitely have some very smart and strategic ways of doing business and just their thought process in certain ways. And I've learned a lot from that, but there are a lot of more like efficient ways. And I think that's what comes down to it, is like efficiency, although it's going to maybe cost a little bit more in the long term, the long run, it's going to be more beneficial. So I think for them, because those who come here with very little and they have this this cost saving strategy in their mind, right, where it's just save, low cost, save, that it really stops them from growing, right? And that's a big issue that I think that we've had within our business over the years, but obviously in general this has definitely, you know, as we get older, they trust us more, they understand, they learn, we teach them as they're teaching us. So it really just comes down to a matter of time, and there's certain things you just can't rush. So it's something that I never wanted to get into in the past, because I just didn't want to deal with that kind of stuff. But, you know, as you get older, you just got to mature and, you know, just deal with it and you move forward, you know, and we're here now.
Was there like a pivotal point where you thought, you know, I need to go back to my family business? Or was it just like kind of given?
Not necessarily. It honestly, I mean, COVID in general is just like, you know, we definitely took a lot more responsibility during this time, you know. So that, I would say that was a very pivotal point with dealing with our family business and being more engaged in a lot more ways. So, I think it just comes in phases, right? So there's sometimes where it's just, you know, you're not really feeling it too much. And then there's other days. I mean, here's the thing. You have to understand, I mean, in the past, since I was a kid, I used to go when my dad, you know, was still growing the business. It was like basically, you know, very small and nothing as a kid, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. Sometimes, you know, I'd go up to the Central Valley in these vans, and, you know, we'd have hundreds of bags, you know, in the back, almonds, pistachios, whatever it is. And I just, you know, I'd be there with them and, you know, I'd sleep in the back on top of the bags. And so I was always there. I was always ingrained within the business somehow, one way or another, for years. So it just kind of, it was only, I guess, natural for me to be part of it, you know, throughout the years, whether I liked it or not, or whether I was fully engaged or not fully engaged, you know?
Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about you and your role in kind of all of this, but let's talk a little bit more about the business itself. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So what we do is we actually are middle, like you could call us like wholesalers, right? So we deal with growers and we deal with distributors, but we also have a few retail, you know, customers that we do have. So
what's product?
So the product is mainly raw nuts, almonds, pistachios, walnuts. We also do dates and Persian cucumbers and a lot of different produce, but we mainly deal with raw nuts. And so what we're doing is we're doing a lot of these raw nut distributions throughout the United States and Canada. And so what we are doing is basically bringing this product, these products from field to market, right? And we're the ones giving to distributors, right? And we're also have our own customers, like supermarkets and whatnot, right? We have our own, and they only deal with us. They won't deal with some distributors, right? So it all just depends. And then obviously we have smaller orders. Usually the big orders, the big shipments every day pretty much are just bags and bags of raw nuts. And it works by season. So currently we actually just finished the almond season. So the almond season starts off with, for those of you, you know, from the Middle East who like and love these raw nuts. First, you start off with eating the green almonds whole. You eat it with some salt, and those of you drink it with some beer. Or you eat it with some beer, sorry. And then over like a few weeks, it takes about 2 to 3 weeks. It just depends on how the season goes that specific year. It hardens on the inside, then you crack it open, and that's how you get like the raw almond that you'll see, or like the dried up almond. We also do make some of our own roasted salted almonds. We work with, you know, local roasteries and like companies that do it. And, you know, it's nothing too big. We mainly do with raw, but that is something small that's part of our business. But yeah, it's pretty wonderful. And now we just finished almond, and we're about to get into pistachios very soon. So it's kind of nice that we just kind of get this break. And the thing about our business is that during the wintertime, it's very, very slow. It's very, very dead. You know.
So what do you do? Do you renovate within like the company structure? Do you do
trainings? That's a good question.
What kind of
so, so we actually are in another industry. We're actually in the car industry. So, you know, we do, it's more of a hobby. We've gotten to a point where it's a hobby. My dad and my uncle have had dealer licenses. They just go to auctions, buy cars, fix them, whatever, and flip them and sell them and all that kind of stuff. But we kind of made it this hobby, and, you know, it's been nice. It's so fun, you know, just dealing with the car industry, and you know, it gives us a lot of time to do that while, you know, while we have this quote unquote downtime. Right. But it's crazy because you're working so much for, you know, 7 months, 8 months out of the year. And when it's like dead, you know, it's like that you worked those months for your year. Like you've made your money, you've done everything that you can, right? And that's like your business, right? That's your way of life, but it's only about 7 or 8 months out of the year. So it's actually very weird the way we do it. But yeah, usually typically winter months, because a lot of these seasons die down, it usually slows down for us in that way, as, you know, middlemen wholesalers.
So I know that in this industry, typically a lot of things are grown in California and they go outside of California. Where do you stand in the middle of this?
We feed, the state of California actually feeds 90% of the United States. So, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. Like, yeah, for us, we're nothing compared to this. We work all the fields, not all the fields, but a lot of the fields we've worked with in the past are huge, huge growers. One of them being the largest blueberry distributor and grower in the world, you know, and that's here in California. So, you know, for us, it's just like very small business type of thing compared to like we have two huge industries in California and in the world now. And before it was just, food was always the top, produce, food, everything was always on the top. That was the top industry until tech came along. So now tech and produce are up there together, just kind of competing, not really with each other, but it's just like competing for a top spot, right? As an industry. So it's a really, really big industry around the world, especially in the United States and especially in California. I mean, California is the fourth largest economy in the world, you know, and it's for a reason, because we've got tech and we've got produce. So, having those, it's pretty essential, but we fall like I'm going to humble myself and tell you, like, we're so insignificant in this industry, you know?
But I know that you had said that, you export.
We do.
So from California, where does your stuff go?
We go to Canada. So for those of you listening, if you're from Canada and you go to Adonis supermarkets, Adonis is a very well-known supermarket in Canada, you know, Arab and you know, that kind of like basis towards like the supermarket. And we ship mainly to them, and, they're like, you know, the main customer out in Canada. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Do you ship to other parts of the States?
Yeah, so we actually ship to Detroit, Michigan, which ends up obviously in Dearborn with a large Arab, especially Lebanese population, which love, you know, these kind of products. We ship out to Texas. We ship out to New York, Northern California. And yeah, I mean, those are like the big ones.
How does the shipping process work? What do you guys do logistically?
That's a good question. So it usually works in terms of it all depends on how big orders are and cost. So sometimes they'll be shipped by truck, right? Depending on orders and how big they are. And also by plane. And that's usually to Canada. It's a lot faster, you know, and more efficient. So you also have to understand, too, that you have to keep in mind these products are, produce in general is a very, like they have a very short shelf life or lifespan, right? So it needs, like, it's so fast, it's so quick, and things need to move very, very quickly, and they need to be contained, and there needs to be quality control and so on and so forth, right? Especially when it comes to cooling, you have to put them in coolers or freezers or whatever, right? And that all this logistics stuff comes down to organizing it so the products don't get messed up, shipping is on time, it's by the time, so what you're looking at now, whether it's ripe or not, is it going to get there and is it still going to be good? So the thing is, for us, why our customers really like dealing with us is because we focus a lot on quality control, right? We're not going to send them products just to make a few bucks, you know, and that's super important. We want to send them products that we've seen with our own eyes. We're going to check them. We're going to look through each box and we're going to look like, are these products good? You know, are we going to ship this out? You know, and that's honestly like the biggest thing when it comes to logistics and shipping out any products. When it comes to shipping out the raw nuts, we have a little bit more control on quality control because we know the fields, because we will not pick a field if we know that it's no good. You know what I mean? So it's going like, it's like the freshest that you'll get straight from field to consumer in a way.
How would you determine if the field is good or not?
That's a good question. Let's take almonds, for example. Almonds, there's different kinds of almonds. And so you have to see, I guess, like what kind of crop it is, right? On the inside, are they holding very well? Is there a lot of, like, if you crack some, like, especially now towards the end of the season, is there a lot of glue? Like, it's like this glue based, sap that comes out of the fruit, right? So that's the kind of quality that we look for. And so we like try to separate, you know, the bad ones from the good ones. But there's a lot of different crops. Like one of them is called like Monterey, right? So it's just, it all depends on what we see, what we like, and what we decide we want to do. And obviously cost and all that kind of stuff plays, like, there's a business aspect to it too, financially. But for the most part, quality is very important to us.
All right, so now we're coming to a little bit of the close or the end of today's segment. Is there anything you'd like to tell our audience, maybe an advice or something that you learned or anything really that's on your mind?
Yeah, I have been working since I was 15 years old. You know, I've always had this mindset of, you know, I appreciate my dad for this. You know, if I wanted something, he's not just going to go and spoil me and buy it. So it really created this, if I want something, I got to go make money, earn it, and buy it myself type of thing, right? And so it really gave me this this really good quality of having a value towards, you know, my finances and really understanding, you know, what's important when it comes to finances, especially when it comes to spending. So that's something that a lot of people really need to dig deep and understand about themselves. That's super important that you need to understand yourself, understand, you know, what makes you happy, understand where you want to be. Do you care about your finances? Do you want to be financially free in the future? And then all that comes down to, you know, what you really want to do in life. And so, things in life are never, you know, going to stay how they are forever. Things can be temporary. So, you know, if those of you who feel like, you know, you're kind of stuck, things are just temporary, especially those of you who are our age. We're young as hell. I mean, we're so young. We have not even gotten close you know, and now is the time to make mistakes. Since I was 15 years old, I've been making mistakes, especially financially in the business world, all kinds of different mistakes. And that's how I've learned. And you just can't dwell on it. You can't. You just got to move forward. I'm not going to dwell on the fact that I'm, you know, doing my family business, even though it's something that I'm not like, oh, I'm so happy. And I definitely want to be here. No, it's not that. Obviously I enjoy my time, especially spending time with my dad, you know, as he gets older and I get older, and I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to like, you know, what I really want to do. And, you know, I'm doing it. Like, you know, you're doing this podcast, I'm doing my stuff. You know, I've got my YouTube and, you know, all my social media stuff. I just started TikTok recently and it's been fun. And it's just about being happy and having fun. You know, I love having fun, and you know, I really urge everybody to really find something that, you know, finds a little passion within them, and just do it. Just freaking do it, you know?
100%. Anise, if people want to connect with your business, how do they do that? If they, you know, they are looking for wholesalers or looking for the products that you just talked about, how do they reach you?
Yeah, starproductsinc@gmail.com. You can email us. You can hit me up on you know, Facebook, Anise Abdul Karim, or Instagram, Anise A. Abdul Karim. But yeah, all my social media is basically my name. You can just hit me up for the most part. Otherwise, just send us an email if you're, you know, looking to deal with us. I posted a lot of our products and stuff on TikTok, and people from all around the country, all around the world, like, where is this? Where can I get some? I want to order some. And obviously they're not big companies or anything, and we don't deal with just like, you know, single, you know, we're not a supermarket, right? But yeah, for the most part, if you're looking for you know, good quality products for your business, definitely hit us up. I would love to connect.
Sweet. All right. So that was Anise Abdul Karim, and this is Boutique Digital Marketing. If you want to talk to us, or if you want to talk to me, email me at info@boutiquedigitalmarketing.com, or you can give us a call at 909-333-5116. And if you have any questions, I would love to hear from you guys. And one more thing, I want you guys to tell me about your businesses, some things that you're struggling about or struggling with, so that we can talk about them in the next episode. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll be with you guys next week.